capital intensive.
Sir, can I make one comment before I pass it on to them? You've covered such an entire, the whole business of planning, but you've never said anything about the enormous amount of black money that you find both in the rural areas and in the urban areas. Does that have anything to do with planning?
It has and hasn't. It has in the sense that we'd like to get hold of that, because that would probably solve many of our problems. It hasn't in the sense that we cannot do anything in planning unless there is some concrete indications. The only thing that has been done is the Chalaya's committee, which has made a broad assessment of what's in generation. Now, what we want is a real good study of how it is generated, the mechanism, and then have strategies to stop it. Now, this is where you have this problem of political will, problem of the kind of interests that are doing. For example, we all know when it comes to textiles, it is being said that the smuggling that is going on in man-made fiber is a tremendous one. And the reason for that is our high excise duty. This is what is said. Now, one of the ways of trying to reduce the duty and say that let us open the duty, there is strong resistance from the finance ministry is loss of revenue. Although they don't see it, that the loss of the loss to the economy is much greater. Now take the other thing, the kind of investments for which this black money is being generated, the real property, real estate and speculation in land. Now this is why we have also pointed out to the government that your land ceiling act and things like that are become counterproductive. They're not working in the way the investment should go, and so on and so forth. But the resistance to policy change is because of the existence of strong vested interests. And the political system, we can ignore, the planning process can ignore vested interests a great deal, but the political process, they do not, unless they have a very strong role, do not ignore the vested interests, and they are swayed, compromised, and that's how we go on. But as far as the other thing, for example, is the taking away the money and putting it in the foreign banks, which is quite well known. Now, the channels of this are also well known. Large projects with very large import content is one, and then invoicing other kinds of things. The other is, it is pointed out very often, that one of the solutions would be make rupee convertible. And this is a question, I don't know what Freddie may be able to answer. This is a question I have also asked my economic friends. But what's the point? You are keeping rupee like this, and since you can't be converted, people are taking it there and laundering it back to China. And what will happen if you make it convertible? In any case, in this basket thing, your real devaluation is taking place all the time. The economists feel that they give a nervous answer to this. They say that if you do that, there will be tremendous flight of capital. And this has happened in some countries, but my own feeling is after some time it will settle down. This can be one of the answers. I don't know. The first point is precisely the recommendation made by Sarkaria Commission, that it should be given more powers, should be made statutory, and the National Development Council must really be an active body, and the Planning Commission should be a secretariat and all that. Now, this was discussed in the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission normally would welcome this, But when you started looking at the balance of advantages, it was felt, and this is I think a good hunch, that in our country, the moment you make a constitutional body, then what will happen, the legalism will come in a very big way. Every issue will become then a legal issue. And the kind of informal, formal kind of relationship and consensus that we are building up, we have still. The Planning Commission, I must say, even the non-Congress, the biggest supporters of Planning Commission are now the non-Congress states. So they feel that they at least get some kind of objective treatment and not biased treatment. That's their feeling. It's a good feeling that for us they have. And they are the ones who say, make Planning Commission statutory body. But a lot will depend, then again, the composition of the Planning Commission, continuity of it, how much political pressure will come on the thing. For example, the Finance Commission. The Finance Commission, many of the states are up in arms, because Finance Commission this time has been given the terms of reference which are totally different from others. For example, normative thing. They said, we are not applying that to the center. And one of the things that is said there, it's mentioned there also and known, that because of this problem of the center's own finances, center has been told the Finance Commission about it, that please look after the center's interests also, and don't give away all the largesse to the states because they need it. Now, that kind of thing, and the chairman of the Finance Commission is a political person. Now, so, in our country, to make anything a legal entity has its disadvantages as well. So one doesn't know at this point of time, given this kind of milieu, whether that will be a good solution. But because by convention, the Planning Commission has established, is accepted as an institution, is accepted as a more or less a non-partisan institution. That image, I think, would be very difficult to do.
Maharaj?
No, he had a second question. Defense, yes. On defense, we have already mentioned this, since defense is not part of the plan thing. We have said that defense on its own ought to have some cost-effective exercises. There used to be a body once, I think Goku was in that committee once. But that being an autonomous kind of thing, it hasn't made much headway. But two things we have suggested all along. One is what you say. But my point is, that goes for railways too. Both these organizations have got commercial establishments which are not run on commercial basis, because they are captive to the buyer and they are paid on cost basis. Now, one of the first reforms to be done is to put them on commercial accounting and exhibit those accounts. That will not divulge any secrets. In any case, most of the secrets of defense are not really, should not be classified. But on that, probably Raja will know more about defense establishments. But I think that point is well taken. Not whether they should make civilian goods or not is not the point. Point is they should be run commercially, they should pay for themselves. If they need to pay for themselves, they'll probably look for products which are not bought by the military but by the others, which they can do. In fact, many years ago, you remember, Krishnamenon precisely started this. And there was strong criticism that you are making coffee machines when you need guns. And unfortunately, the 1962 debacle came, and all that was gone out, and there's a proliferation of defense establishments, and that area certainly needs. The second thing that is being suggested, that whether, since India is taking all the time positive moves towards world peace and peace with the neighbors and so on, and today's situation fortunately is hopeful because of the initiatives taken by Soviet Union and so on, whether a good external policy, external affairs policy, will reduce the tensions and reduce the need for arms. But defense is certainly a big sore.
Yes, sir, I think your comments on two items, those first is that it appears to us that the world over there is a tendency to give free of play to market forces. Even the economies that have been centrally controlled seem to be moving in this direction. How does this
friends find a place in our planning mechanism and the kind of role for the or the increasing boundaries for the public sector, etc., how do they fit into this trend worldwide?
Right. Let's not talk about worldwide. Let's confine to the specific thing that we are talking about, Soviet Union or China, say, centrally controlled economy. Now there, I think there's a bit of misunderstanding on this question of their change from planning, market economy and glasnost and all that. What is happening in those economies, the kind of change, and I've been to China also recently, and what is happening is that their centrally controlled economy was doing planning with a vengeance, in the sense that practically every unit, the whole country, was given their targets for production. And they didn't have any commercial accounting either. The result was that all the undertakings felt that as long as we fulfill the target, whether it is consumed or not, whether anybody wants it or not, is not our business. The state will look after that. That means state will look after the distribution, state will look after the profits and all that. This was not there at all. And as an example I'll give you, China at one point of time was producing 40 million tons of steel. They had gone up, they started with us, but they have gone up to that stage. And they found that they have got an accumulation of inventory of steel of 20 million tons. The reason for that was they had not planned consumer goods at all. And much of this, the construction and other things were done, and since they did not do any consumer goods, this was there. So they changed over to consumer goods. Then they found the other big main point, which is common with us. They found that the state ownership meant that up to a point productivity goes up, but after that is stagnating, there's no motivation. So from these points of view, the kinds of reforms that they are making are really making these organizations more autonomous. They are being asked that you manage your own affairs, we'll put you on commercial accounting, and you will give the state so much and leave this with you. You can spend it as you like, and you will produce according to the needs. That's what their market force means, that the consumption goods particularly should be done according to the market existing there for consumption. And therefore they are now doing their own market surveys and things like that. For example, in China again I saw in textiles, they did produce, because somebody ordered so many garments, the standardized design, and they produced millions of those and they're not selling, well, nobody would buy them. So they have gone on to this kind of getting a survey of the styles, what kind of things they need. That is the kind of market forces they are releasing. This is the market economy. They are not, and that is the biggest difference, they are not allowing two things, that investments to be done by them autonomously anywhere, unless it is their own expansion or something else. And they are also not allowing any private activity or investment which will enable the private entrepreneur to employ people. Because that is exactly their whole philosophy is that. And that is exactly what they are not allowing. But they are allowing this in the service sectors, quite largely. For example, that's again because of a need. In Beijing and Shanghai, the main thing, there are millions of cycles. But since everything was nationalized, they didn't have, if you had a puncture, you could not repair anywhere. That sort of thing cannot be done by the state. But they have gone to that kind of absurdity in their ideological thing. Now these things are releasing. Similarly, in the agricultural production, they are allowing people to have excess production in their own plot of land. After giving the state levy, the rest they can sell. And they are making money. To that extent they are going well. Which is not exactly market in the sense that we see, that it's a free market.
No, they seem to have moved from the position they were.
No, I'm coming to that. I'm coming to that. In our situation, we never had that kind of thing, problem at all, in the sense, all our distribution force, distribution is entirely market-oriented. Distribution is not dictated by any government fiat or anything. Distribution is totally market. To that extent, we have market. And we don't need any market forces. Now, the next thing that you are talking about, when you talk about Britain or France or thing, is privatization. That is, I've got an article written on that, I might send it to you then. I made a study of that. Now, if you look at it in all these Western countries, the privatization phase is coming not because of ideology. Ideology has played a part with Mrs. Thatcher, but not with anyone else. They are coming basically from the desire to offload the budgetary constraints. That is the main thing. That's why what they are doing is disinvestment. Now, the disinvestment in Western Germany and in France particularly has been by selling shares to put more money into the general budget. But there, the core sectors, and what they call golden chips and all that, they have not allowed at all to be privatized. Similarly, and this privatization also is nothing to do with ideology. For example, the motor car companies being bought by Fiat in Spain, one is buying one from the public sector to the public sector, also buying is taking place. So it is really, the approach is really disinvesting. Instead of the state's money being blocked, capital being blocked one, they are putting it out. Now, in our situation, also, as I was explaining all the time, that the governmental finances are becoming so strained that the government will not be able to do this. And therefore, government will not probably invest any more other than the things which they already have. Now, government, the next question comes, will government disinvest? Now, disinvestment problem are twofold. One is purely a commercial kind of problem. Now, who will buy that? I mean, if the government has to disinvest, the first thing will be the Delhi Transport Corporation or the Heavy Engineering Corporation, which are the biggest, two big ones. Who will buy that? Nobody will buy that. So the question of disinvestment becomes very difficult there. The second problem is closing down, which is a big problem, political problem, because of the displacement of labor. Now, any government, a politically elected government, they cannot be blind to a social problem of, as it is, we have got an unemployment problem. On top of it, if you displace labor in an unplanned fashion, without having some kind of social security or rehabilitation program, you just can't do it. And unfortunately, nobody has really come up with very good planned displacement of labor. When you talk of modernization, there's the same problem that will arise. The private sector